Welcome to Rebel Health Radio, bringing the best in alternative and integrative medicine to your ears. Hi everyone, it's Patricia Warby here from Alchemy Therapies and my emotional audit and everything else that I do. And today I want to talk about someone who's had a huge influence on me, who's very undervalued. In fact, she's almost unknown outside of family therapy. And her name is Virginia Satir. And people often ask me, you know, how did you get into this work? You know, what guided you? And, you know, as if you were kind of born to be a therapist. And of course, that's not the case. We normally end up doing this because of our own experiences. And that's very much the case for me. Obviously, I've talked about that many times. I'm not going to go over what happened to me. And there's plenty of videos in my channel about how I got ill and what I had to do to get well. But when I was training as a hypnotherapist back in 2012, I think it was now, a long time ago, we were asked to sort of identify someone who would model the way we wanted to work. In other words, to kind of see something out there that we could focus on to kind of model ourselves and have a role model to enact. Before we got confident, you kind of, that's a good as if frame. They call it an as if frame. So you model yourself on someone to kind of pretend in a way, but in a good way, that you you can kind of get into the flow of the kind of work you wanted to do. Now, it was quite interesting because my training was very cognitive behavioral hypnotherapy, okay, from a guy who was very aversive to emotion. He was like, there's no point in having people cry with you, you know, crying's just a waste of time, da 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 da. And I was like, no, I completely disagree. I think crying's really important because it kind of releases emotion. And anyway, my tutor didn't agree. That wasn't what he was teaching. He was teaching you to analyze your thoughts, to look at, yeah, some of the unconscious stuff as well. That's what hypnotherapy does. But he was not interested, and he taught that emotions were sort of a little bit uncomfortable in the way of therapy. And I just, there was a part of me that really didn't resonate with that. And then I came across Virginia Satir, who I just stumbled upon. Goodness knows, I guess the universe wanted me to discover her. Now, Virginia was born in 1914. Okay, so long, long time ago. She died in 1988. She was one of the most influential people in, I think, the whole of, well, certainly family therapy, but I think her approach is applicable to many, many other modalities. And I would say she should be much more well known than she is. So she basically talked about the importance of emotions in working with people, okay, in communicating in relationship with people, and certainly in a therapeutic relationship, but also she specifically looked at family relationships. And just to put that in context, in the time in which she was studying, the field was dominated completely by men. It was very much the behavioralists were in charge, and they were very left brain, cognitive, thinking, analytical. Your behavior was driven by, you know, erroneous thoughts, and you needed to change your thoughts and then you would change your behavior. That was the kind of behavioralist approach. And she just blew that apart. And one of the first things she did to blow that apart was she started communicating with clients in ways in which their bodies were involved, okay? And so she would often, and you will see this on the videos, she would take their hand. And I do that naturally when I'm working with people, not all the time. I mean, you know, and there are some people, if they're very defended, who you might struggle to do that. But most of the people that come to work with me are seeking help, and they want to know that they're safe. They want to feel safe in the environment they're in with me, that I'm creating for them. And one of the best ways of communicating safety is to touch someone. Now, it might not be that I hold their hand. Sometimes I just touch them gently on the knee or on the arm, or I'm certainly leaning in and I'm communicating with my eyes and my voice. Now, this was completely not just blowing out the park what everybody else was doing, where you just sit back and you observe and you nod and you know, look at the difference. You know, just if I'm just going, how interesting. Or I'm leaning in and I'm saying, yes, it's okay. I understand. and tell me a little bit more about that. You know, that's empathy, that's communication. And so she really said the things that people make change only when they feel safe, when they feel seen, heard, and hopefully held. All right. And so touch is obviously one of those modalities, sight, sound, and touch. And so I use my voice as an instrument to communicate safety. And I do that by making it musical, by making it melodic or prosodic. And so that's really important. And then I lean in and I look at you with a soft gaze. And so I'm not judging you, all right? Or looking disinterested or dispassionate. I'm engaged with you. And then finally, you are given the messages from those sensory inputs that your body responds to. It's your body that makes the decision whether to trust someone, all right? It isn't a mental thinking perception. That comes later. Initially, your body will respond. If you feel safe with someone, you'll know immediately if you do or don't. All right. So she taught a very different idea of therapy to anyone else. And then she decided that most issues that she saw were as a result of faulty beliefs around relationship that people had been taught from their earliest experiences. Now, this fits beautifully with the current understanding of trauma and internal family systems, but of course, that was completely unknown. Nobody really understood this stuff then. And so, the importance of relationship has to be from how you perceive the other person, and you will do that through the lens of your perception, which is based on the past, and projecting the past onto the current situation and making an interpretation. And it's not always accurate. In fact, mostly it's inaccurate. And so she talked about mistaking power for intimacy, all right? Power over, we should say, right? So if I'm standing or sitting like this, I am indicating to you that I have power over you. I am sitting in judgment of you. And you will see this in therapist offices where they have the big chair. Okay. They have the big chair, the one that swivels and does all the stuff. And you have the small chair and you're coming in to be helped. You're the one with the problem, remember? Power over is not intimacy. Now, I should also say in personal relationships, this is the same thing. So if you grew up with a domineering parent, you will have learned that you are nothing, that you don't have validity. And so you will always be on the back foot waiting for someone to attack you. And you will perceive whatever is said to you through that lens. And you never think to ask yourself, is what I'm perceiving accurate? And you could ask the person, is this what you mean? But people seldom do ask that. They usually just leap to an assumption and react accordingly. Okay, if you grew up with a parent who didn't set boundaries, you don't know where you are in a relationship. You don't know what's outside of you and what's inside you, what's yours and what's not yours. And so you will leap to take over and kind of interpret for people, which is my problem, definitely my pattern, instead of just being and allowing the person to be different to you, okay? So mistaking power for intimacy, she says, is psychological death, all right? And it's death of the relationship, okay? Because if there's a power imbalance, you are not relating as peers. Now, whether that's a love relationship or a relationship with a parent or a child. Now, obviously, when a child is young, you wouldn't expect a peer relationship. And in fact, that's inappropriate. But when the child grows up, many people are still relating to their children, and parents and children are still relating in exactly the same way as they did when the child was young. And so it's really disempowering to feel that you are not valid in the eyes of another person. And that anger gets sublimated or repressed into your body, and it comes out in all sorts of symptoms. Let's explain what I mean by that. So You are furious that you're not being heard, you're not supported, you don't feel safe, but you have no way of escaping or expressing that because you're stuck. You're stuck in a relationship that's always been the way it is. And so your body, which is in fight and flight, will have to express that for you by being braced all the time, by being in a state of survival or threat. And you may get tingling, pins and needles. You may get a sense of chest tightening. You may feel that your stomach is constantly gurgling. And there's all sorts of ways in which your body will express this, okay? But effectively, you don't feel at ease with yourself, and you will often be furious without knowing that you're furious because perhaps your emotions were never supported when young, and you now have taken on that role of suppressing your own emotions because they're not acceptable. And so the body has to play that out in whatever way it finds effective, but it can cause great hardship. And modern medicine, because it doesn't look at psychology at all, won't have the answer. It will just symptom suppress. It won't look at the underlying beliefs and behaviors as coming from unexpressed emotional responses. So back to Virginia. She actually got people to role play. And this is fantastic. You know, this was not done at the time. You did not do this. Internal family systems does this now. Family constellations work does this. You get people to play the roles of the people in your life, and you play with that in different positions. And so she shows people being in the position of a child. She gets them to kneel down, to be small in comparison with someone else. I mean, this was revolutionary. Okay. And then she gets them to stand up again and do the same thing on their own two feet. And she says, notice how different that feels when you're standing on your own two feet. Notice the power dynamic between people when one person is telling the other what they should be feeling, and the other person is really not wanting to hear that. All right, now you stand up on your own two feet and you're equal. Now you get to really listen and be present with someone. Just phenomenal work, really. This is so different to anything else that was being done at the time. We're talking 1960s, 1970s, 1980s were the periods when she was really influential. You have freedom to move, okay? You have freedom to be different, to express yourself, to disagree, but to be willing to connect, which is heart to heart. You know, you're going to listen because you want to, because you want connection. You want to be heard. You want to be seen. And you can teach each other about yourselves when you are in that state of calm receptivity, as opposed to reactivity, wanting to get the next word in or wanting to be right, which of course is the ego, is that kind of sense of identity that you are stuck with, that you believe you have to be right. And the need to be right, by the way, will actually be something that you will defend even when it's dysfunctional. Now, that isn't necessarily the work of Virginia. That's and Peter Crone teaches this, is another great teacher that I've come across recently. That we will defend the dysfunction. If you're not going to listen to me and love me, then I'm going to dismiss you, you know, and I'm going to defend that right. Well, you just don't understand me. All right. And so you defend the thing that actually your ego is identifying with. It's remarkable. Instead of demanding how others should be, you should be like me. Be willing to inhabit the achy ground of uncertainty and ask, what is it you want me to know about you? That's just such a different approach, okay? It's so, well, it's difficult. Because we haven't been taught this, all right? We were never taught this in school. One of the audience members in the evening with Virginia sat here, which is one of the longest videos I've watched of her, said, why isn't this taught in schools and in universities and colleges? Because it's so fundamental to how we relate to each other. And she said, I've no idea why, but here we are, we're learning and it is going to change. And she was really hopeful about humanity. You see, intimacy, true intimacy. First of all, for intimacy, you need safe connection. All right. You need to feel safe with another person to be intimate with them. Otherwise, you'll just be in defensive reactivity. And you also need intimacy to take in the differentness of someone else, all right? They are not like me. Okay, we're all completely unique. That was one of Virginia's teachings, and she celebrated that. And she said that feeling that you don't understand me creates a huge amount of loneliness. And how do we deal with loneliness? We become addicts. We whether that's traditionally addicted to drink, drugs, shopping, sex, whatever, or we numb ourselves with pointless consumerism, which is what the world is based on now, even with young children. And you have to have this perfect mask to the world where you have to look perfect and do what everyone else does. I mean, that's not living. That's not real life, okay? And it creates a huge amount of suffering because we end up with physical chronic conditions that modern medicine does not know how to deal with. So each human being is a unique manifestation of divine force, of a divine force, right? She said that. I mean, this is 1984, guys. This is 40 years ago when people did not speak like this, whether they were therapists or not. You did not talk about divine anything. And you certainly didn't. I mean, she wasn't speaking about God here. The divine is actually a connection to the spiritual. That's what she's talking about. She talked about privacy, the importance of having a place for me in your life, for yourself, where you get to explore yourself rather than always expecting kind of to have to be dealing with external things, that you need time for you, so that your yeses have real power because you've thought about them, because you've determined what you want, and because your no's are accepted. Okay, Gabor Mate has talked about that a lot more recently. We ask to be heard by someone, all right? And we allow for the fact that that may be difficult and it will make us feel new because we're not used to it. She talked about vibrations, that everything is energy and vibrations, and the vibration of one's voice and the tone of your voice and the way you're speaking to someone and your body movements are also taken in as information, all right? Now, I use my voice in a very particular way. I modulate, all right? But if I change my voice and I become really aggressive and I talk to you like this and I'm teaching you, for God's sake, why don't you listen? Notice the effect of that in your body, all right? That's not going to actually teach you anything apart from how to be defended. And she said what's missing in the discussion of between people in relationships is the ability to disagree while still being in connection, all right? And learning to find out what each other needs and wants, rather than needing to be in charge, all right, or needing to be right. And then I suddenly thought, my God, Parliament, we don't learn to discuss things. We just teach people what we know and what's right, and then we argue about it. No wonder we're in the state we're in. When we come into true connection with someone, we allow for their difference without needing to change that. All right, and then we look for the common factors where we're actually having proper communication. And in doing that, we gain energy. All right, when we're constantly firefighting against something that we disagree with, it's exhausting, whether that's another person or our experience of life. I hate my life. I hate the way people respond to me. I hate the fact that I haven't got what I want, more money or more things or better job or a bigger car or whatever it is. We're exhausting ourselves because we're in battle with our experience, okay? And she talked about the idea that when we're in communication, we have an image in our mind of what the other person means. And she said, always check in first before you respond. Have a gap between what they've just said and your response so that you get to just check in. Is what they have said what I've interpreted, because often they're not the same thing. And she used to drag people from the audience when they ask a question. How about this? All right, you're in a conference and you put your hand up, you want to ask a question. Now, most people will take the question from where they are on the stage and you're in the audience. Virginia didn't do that. She would say, come up and ask me. And she would take their hand and she would say, now, what is it you want to ask? I mean, and most people were like, whoa, okay. But they really, really benefited from it, because then she would say, well, tell me about what you're seeing when you ask that question. And then you would get the information that you needed to answer it. Okay. I'm not going to go into that in detail. I'm going to reference the actual original video. Be aware, sound quality is pretty poor, but watch how she does that right at the end with questions and answers. And she gets people to actually elucidate what they're meaning by that. And God, I'm definitely going to use that a lot more. You know, not assuming that I know what they mean, but just asking, is this what you're asking me? Can you tell me what you're seeing when you're asking me that? We don't always know what it is that we know, all right? And we don't always evaluate that, what we've learned in life, and we assume that other people are fixed too. And yet, they may know an awful lot that we don't know. And we may be able to learn from other people. But if we don't ask, what are you meaning by that? And can you explain that a little bit more? We don't get their perception in an accurate form. And so we're just blindly trying to respond to things that we don't have an accurate picture of. So I just think this is incredible. It's okay to make mistakes as well. You know, it's okay to not know. It's okay to blunder around a little bit and admit your vulnerability. This is something I've been teaching this week to somebody, and it was such an important learning for me, because I grew up very defended and thinking I had to know the answer to everything. And if I didn't know the answer, I was weak or stupid, and I didn't dare to be weak or stupid. So I never admitted my own unknowing. And you don't need to make someone do something. You don't want to make them like you. All right, you don't need to do that. Actually, the best way of getting the result you want is to understand the other person's perspective and feel that connection with them and say, well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's not how I perceived it, but how interesting that you see things that way. And you come then from a place of connection and compromise and the willingness to be seen in your unknowing. All right. Uncertainty is a very difficult thing for most of us. We want to know, we want to fix, we want to have a strategy. And emotions aren't like that. They can hijack us at any time. They can come up and teach us something. They're always there to teach us something about where we are out of alignment with ourselves. Peter Crone talks about this, you know, and all the situations in your life are there to teach you where you are not free. That's what he says. Great teacher, another Brit, as it happens, living in America. His recent conversation with Rangan Chatterjee was one of the best I've witnessed, actually. And again, I'll put that in the description in the show notes. So be aware, folks, that there are answers out there, that it's not about thinking, it's about feeling. It's 90% of everything you do, you just don't know it. And be willing to say, I need help, I need support, I need some way of getting outside my own fixed boundaries of who I am and what I need to be doing, and get into feeling your way through. So Virginia was a great influence on me. I have to admit I'm breaking boundaries. I think I am. I work in a very particular way with people. Because I work online, touch is often inappropriate. It's impossible, not inappropriate. It's impossible. But I communicate in all the other ways that I'm able to, and then I get people to self soothe. using self-touch, which is something called havening. Okay, which you can do now with me, just listening to this before we say goodbye. I matter. I'm here and I'm learning, and that's enough. And take a breath. All right. Well, if any of this that I've spoken about today is of interest to you, please get in touch. Know that you're worthy, and you deserve to live life wholeheartedly. So take care of yourselves. Bye for now. Bye bye. Hey, hope you enjoyed listening to Rebel Health Radio. Do subscribe and look forward to catching you soon.